It's Illinois Edition. I'm Brian Mackey. Civil asset forfeiture, when the government can take property even without charging someone with a crime, has been the target of attacks by civil libertarians. Law enforcement, on the other hand, has defended the practice. The debate is playing out in Illinois. In this story, we're going to hear two points of view on civil asset forfeiture. Is it just about making money for government, or is it a valuable tool for law enforcement? First, let's describe civil asset forfeiture. This is when the police seize property that's used to commit a crime, like, say, a van used to transport a significant quantity of marijuana.
A person need not be convicted of any crime or even arrested in order for the state to seize and permanently forfeit their property, including a car, cash, or even a house.
This is Mary Dixon, legislative director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois, and she's right. Forfeiture cases are the government against the thing being seized. This can lead to some odd case names, like People versus $12,601.33 in U.S. currency. That's an actual case name from California. Because the case targets the asset, Dixon says there are peculiarities to asset forfeiture that are quite different from criminal cases.
No attorneys provided to a person seeking to contest the forfeiture of their property, even if they are indigent.
And unlike in a criminal case where the government has the burden to prove that someone did something wrong, forfeiture cases put the burden on the property owner to prove the item should not be seized.
The current law, to state it mildly, is grossly unfair to property owners.
So how does that play out in real life? Let's hear from Larry Vandersnick.
January 10, I was woke up and I was drinking my coffee and I was reading my newspaper, and the front page just jumped out at me like this. It says, "Grandmother's Jeep seized. Forfeiture law means woman paying for grandson's crime."
Vandersnick is a former judge and prosecutor who's now in private practice in Henry County near the Quad Cities. The grandmother whose vehicle was seized was Judy Weiss.
The article said she couldn't afford an attorney. She filed an answer and the judge threw it out. They said it had to be verified and it had to be notarized, and she didn't know how to do it.
Remember, because this was a civil asset forfeiture, Grandma was not entitled to a court-appointed lawyer. Vandersnick took her case and filed the paperwork correctly. He says typically it can take 2 or 3 months to get a court date. This is in Rock Island County. So he says he met with Rock Island County State's Attorney John McGehee.
There was a lot of press on this particular case. I got several calls in support. John McGehee got several calls not in support.
Vandersnick says that put him in a good situation to plead Judy's case. He says it goes like this. Judy's grandson was arrested for driving under the influence and had his license suspended. She had previously loaned her car to him and asked if the suspension was over. Vandersnick says the grandson said, "Oh, yeah."
And she saw the driver's license. She thought if a guy had a driver's license, it was good to drive. So she gave him, loaned him the car. And he got picked up and they seized her car. This was in August.
Fast forward to January and the newspaper article and Vandersnick's involvement. He says he was able to negotiate a settlement where Weiss got her car back and only had to pay a $150 towing bill, which someone donated on her behalf.
But this is a story that this is only one of many. I've done several forfeiture cases. I did one for a father who loaned his cell phone to a son. And the son got picked up for marijuana, and they forfeited his phone. And I was able to get that back for him.
Some prosecutors' offices, at least two in Illinois, have set up their own police forces for the express purpose of seizing assets. Often, the offices get to sell those assets and use the proceeds to fund operations. The problem with that, as civil libertarians see it, is that it distorts incentives.
This needs to not be understood as a revenue source for the government.
Benjamin Riddell is the criminal justice policy attorney for the ACLU of Illinois.
The statute even says in the legislative declaration section, while forfeiture may secure for state and local units of government some resources for deterring drug and abuse and drug trafficking, forfeiture is not intended to be an alternative means of funding the administration of criminal justice. But that's what it's become in some places.
Riddell says it also takes a toll on the individuals whose property is taken.
Please understand that for the individual, having a property taken is a punishment. Just like being incarcerated, just like receiving a sentence of probation, a fine, court supervision, or any other sanction the state imposes on a person for violating the law.
Weiss, the grandmother, talked about her experience at a hearing in the Illinois Capitol earlier this year.
I was just sick all the time. I'm elderly, and I had no way to get food, no way to go anywhere. I had no transportation whatsoever. Had I not had a friend and that could take me or bring me some food, I don't know what I would have done. I was just in that bad of shape.
As you often hear me say, the stories, the narratives that you hear are part of the story, but not all of the story.
Matt Jones is with the state's attorney's appellate prosecutor's office and often speaks on behalf of Illinois prosecutors.
I'm going to be respectful, but I'm not going to let a couple of pieces of commentary go unchallenged. The circumstances in which Mr. Vandersnick and Ms. Weiss found themselves in tell part of the story, but they do not tell the part of the story in which Ms. Weiss has two grandsons and has very familiar with this process because she has, unfortunately for her, encountered it multiple times.
Jones says there would be a DUI and she would go to get the car back. There would be a license revocation and she would get the car back.
Or in the instance of the most recent case, the grandson, he took her vehicle and totaled it. So there was nothing to retrieve. She bought a new vehicle, allowed him to have access to it. Within a short period of time, it was once again seized.
Ultimately, Jones says Weiss encountered this system five times and had arguably enabled her grandson's misdeeds. That's why prosecutors felt they needed to get the vehicle away, as Jones put it.
From the hands of a grandson who will drink and drive and crash a car and maybe kill somebody next time.
Jones also says there was no profit motive in this case, as the lien holder on the vehicle was the bank, which would have gotten the vehicle back. Ultimately, Jones says, police and prosecutors often have good reasons for seizing property as a crime-fighting tool.
I'm not sure I recognize the system that's described here today because it certainly isn't reflective of the system that we have in the state of Illinois that I am familiar with. I'm aware of the abuses that have been talked about nationally and even in Illinois. This is, to be fair, part of a national movement.
That is true, and it's a movement with strange bedfellows. It's brought together the conservative Koch brothers and the ACLU. With everything else happening in Illinois this spring, legislators did not take up the matter of civil asset forfeiture. But a spokesman for the ACLU of Illinois says the group is not giving up on pushing to change the system in the next legislative session. I'm Brian Mackey.